This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for April 2nd, 2015, episode 1139.
Good morning!
It's Thursday.
Let's kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
Welcome to another classic mashup, everyone. That's the once-in-a-while special occasion when I reach into the Hit'em audio vault and pull out some gems from the past. This time, it's Crazy Barn Stories, eventing legend Robert Micklem, and a list of You Know You Are a Horse Person When observations. Sit back and enjoy.
Glenda Geek here. The life of horse person is hard enough, and we all hate doing the required paperwork, and unfortunately many of us never get around to it, and it just piles up on our desk. That is about to change thanks to the Equisketch Records app for your iPhone or iPad. My wife and I use it to track our horses, and we absolutely love this thing. Equisketch Records is the most thorough and complete equestrian records app on the market today. We love this app because you can track your farrier work, your dental, your coggins, medicines, worming, and so much more. And you can get reminders on your device when all of these things are due. You'll never forget a worming or shots or farrier visit again. But it not only tracks your horse, you can also manage your horse shows, including individual events. You can manage riders, including lessons and memberships, and so much more. And you can sync it between your iPhone and your iPad, and all of this for the price of a couple of cups of coffee from Starbucks. Search for Equisketch Records in the iOS App Store or go to equisketch.com. That's EQUISKETCH.com. Equisketch.com.
And this is for you, Jamie.
So as we have discussed, it is my Friday, and that's really, really exciting because tomorrow I get to go to a horse trial in the middle of nowhere, California, okay? I mean, this is like literally the middle of nowhere. So middle of nowhere that there's no cell phone service. I can't do the show. It's the only horse trial like this a year. It's called 3-Day Ranch. Well, I get this email yesterday. And, you know, I live in Phoenix where it's like rains like maybe one day a year. And I've been going to these horse trials where it's just been this amazingly perfect weather. And then I got this email last night. Hello. The latest forecast expects rain will start Friday night, early Saturday morning, with the bulk of rain midday Saturday. They expect showers for Sunday. Although we can't say exactly, the prediction is for a half to 1 inch of rain. In general, be prepared for periods of rain, no rain, showers, cold, and cloudy weather. There is no snow in the current forecast for our area. Safe travels. See you soon. Where am I going? My God. Apparently, it's in the mountains. And I was not informed that this cross-country course is all uphill and downhill. So, it'll be uphill and downhill in the rain and the cold. My horse is going to kill me. He's going to
Aren't you so glad you're not sleeping in a tent and you have your new trailer? Aren't you so glad you have your living quarters?
I am. You know, we were like, should we take all the dogs? Well, after reading this email, the dogs are not coming. I am not having three muddy-ass dogs jumping in my new trailer. It's not going to happen. Sorry, pooches. You get to stay with Jose for the weekend. So, apparently rain. And you know what is really awesome is they say that the bulk of the rain is going to come about midday Saturday. And guess when I do show jumping? Yeah, about midday Saturday.
Saturday. It never rains in Southern California either. Apparently, you're going on the one weekend a year it's going to.
I guess so. And this is like in the mountains or something, so it's super high elevation, so that's why it's so cold. This is going to be so fun. I'm really looking forward to it now. Get my mug boots. Gross. I have another one. Well, this past week we had listener Shauna Kroll on to literally put up with our stupidity about standardbred racing, and she was very patient and educational. If you want to hear anything about standardbred racing, kind of the 101, go back and listen to, I think it was Tuesday's show. Well, apparently last night Wildfire, her horse, standardbred racehorse, won last night, making a new lifetime mark of 155-2. She went gate to wire and won by 2 lengths. And then Tuesday night, Commence Fire won, and he was awesome too. That's her Facebook post. And she also says keep her friend Marie in her thoughts. She's going through a tough surgery. Anyway, congratulations, Shauna. We would definitely say a prayer for your friend Marie. So there you go. Now tell me your story.
I'm moving to Florida, Shauna, and you're winning all this. I expect dinner. You can afford to buy me dinner now when I move to Florida, Shauna. I'm just saying.
Cha-ching.
You're doing good. Good job, Shauna. Okay, so my daily winnie goes out to my lovely wife, Jennifer, who is the lock picker extraordinaire. And I'll tell you a little story of what happened last night. And this is one of those things, like, you can't make this stuff up. You just can't make
it
up.
She is the what extraordinaire?
Lock picker extraordinaire.
That's what I thought you said. And
So we decided that we had to head over to the barn, and we had to go over there for a couple minutes, take care of Beaker. And we've been having this mission of getting the cat out of the house because the cat has never been out of the house, and we're thinking if the cat ends up having to move to Ocala, the cat's going to need to get out of the house and get used to the car because it's going to be in the car for 12 hours. So we got the cat a little harness thingy, you know, and the cat, our cat's name is the Beast, for those that don't know, and he has that name for a reason because he's kind of beastie. So we put the little harness on him. Well, he takes the harness quite well, and we decide 2 days ago we took him out, and he did pretty good. After about a half an hour screaming nonstop in our ears in the car, looking out the windows, he quieted down. So yesterday I said, well, we're going out to the barn, perfect opportunity to take the cat and the dog along for another ride to get him used to it. So that's all well and good. So we get the cat in the car, and we load him up, and we load the dog up, and we head over to the barn. Well, the idea that we have is that one of us has to stay in the car so the cat doesn't, like, shred the interior of the car and into little tiny bits of plastic, which he would do. So Jennifer says, okay, we park at the garage or the barn, and Jennifer says, I'll go take care of the horse. You stay in the car. So
what did you have to do when you stayed in the car, Glenn?
I was supposed to read my phone and play Words with Friends.
Get so, caught up on the game. Gotcha. Now, can I jump in here real quick? This is not an infant you're talking about or a toddler that you have to watch in the car. It's a cat, right? Couldn't you just crack the windows and walk away, but no, he'll shred things?
Yeah, we're kind of figuring he's going to shred the interior of the car because he's mad that he's in the car.
He does
and
that.
And his name is the Beast for a reason. So I'm in the car with the dog and the cat, and I got the air conditioner going. It's kind of warm here yesterday. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, I looked down at my phone, and of course, you know me, Jamie. How long did it take for the ADD to kick in and for me to get bored in the car?
I give you 90 seconds.
It's probably about 60. You gave me a little too much credit. ADD kicks in. I'm getting bored with my phone. After about 60 seconds, Jennifer's off cleaning Beaker's stall. And I'm going, well, let's just see how the cat does by himself in the car with the dog. I'll just peek from around the corner. So I get out of the car, and I shut the door, and the cat runs right over to the driver's side. Now, let me preface this with saying I left the car on because I'm considerate of my pet, and I left the car on with the air conditioner going. So I get out of the car, I shut the door, and the cat runs right over to see me through the window, and I hear click.
Oh, God.
He steps on the lock button of the car. With the car running, with the air conditioner going.
And let me guess, you did not crack a window.
No,
well,
we did not.
No, I didn't. So right. I think, well, Jennifer must have her keys. This is easy, no problem. We're at the barn, and the car is running with the air conditioner going. And I had noticed before I got out of the car that we had about maybe about an eighth of a tank of gas left.
Oh, God.
So I think Jennifer will have her keys, and then I look in the car after I'm swearing at the cat, not believing that this has happened. And I look on the floor, and there's her purse. And I know she keeps the keys in her purse and never puts them in her pocket. So I go walking over to the stall where she's cleaning the stall, being all happy. And I say, Jennifer, you don't have the keys to the car, do you? And she said, no, they're in my purse on the floor in the car. Why? So I have to proceed to suck up all the pride I have and tell Jennifer that because of me getting my ADD kicking in and me getting bored in about 30 seconds, I had to get out of the car to experiment to see if the cat would actually shred the car while I'm watching, and the cat immediately locked the door. I mean, it wasn't 2 seconds after I shut that door that the cat ran over, jumped up, and I heard click. So I thought, what am I going to do? You know, both sets of keys are in the car. It's got about an eighth of a tank of gas. The cats are going to die of heat exhaustion.
What was the first question I asked you after you said the cat locked the car doors? Did I say, did you crack a window, Glenn?
And I said, no, I didn't crack a window. Why would I crack a window? I got the air conditioner on.
Oh, God, you're stupid. Sorry.
Jennifer says, fortunately, I cracked a window on my side. So we go look, and sure enough, my lovely, thoughtful wife had cracked the window about a half an inch. I mean, not far at all. Not enough to get your hand in and lock the door. So we're going, okay, now what do we do? Because my fear is now the car's going to run out of gas. First of all, with the new cars running out of gas, that's never a good thing. That costs you $500. We're going to have to get a locksmith out here, which is going to cost $150. And hopefully he can come out before the gas runs, or the car runs out of gas, and then the pet dies of asphyxiation and the heat of the car. And so I'm going, and the whole time, Glory, our greyhound, is looking up at me going, can I come out and play? Why are you standing at the window? So my thought was, get the cat to come over to the window again and step on the unlock button. That's my brilliant thought. And, of course, so I'm here, kitty, 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 tapping on the window, kitty, 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 tapping on the window. And, of course, he's staring at me from the seat going, what the hell do you want? You know,
no,
and
he's
then,
staring course, at you going, my plan worked. The humans are upset.
he would not come over to the window again.
I can now kill the dog in peace.
So Jennifer's like, I can get the door open with, I'll figure out something. So she goes over to her tack trunk. And she, where'd you get, by the way, where did you get the shoelace tie, the shoelaces? One of your pairs of paddock?
I keep a spare set of shoelaces in my tack trunk.
So I see her getting out the shoelaces and tying them together, and then she's getting out the duct tape. And I'm thinking, well, we're going MacGyver territory here now. And I said, what are you doing with the duct tape? You're going to try and I just couldn't figure that out. And she said, I'm going to take little strips of duct tape, and I'm going to put it on the little loop of the shoelace I'm making so that when I drop it down over the car doohickey, you know, the little thing you pull up, when I get it in there and drop it down over that the duct tape will stick to it so it won't slide off. And I was like, yeah, right, that's never going to work in 100 years. The duct tape's going to get stuck to the window and it'll never work. How many times do us husbands say that to our wives when we know we're wrong and we're going to have to eat it later? But we keep doing it over and over and over again. It's like a thing with guys. We cannot not doubt our wives when they come up with these ingenious harebrained ideas. So she takes these little strips of duct tape, and she wraps them around a little loop that she's made in the end of the shoelaces. And the theory is that we're going to put that through the opening in the window, and we're going to drop it down over the little thing you pull up, and we're going to pull it up. But now, you know, in the old days with cars, with that little knob you pulled up, they had a little lip at the top. So there was actually a little lip at the top that she could get a hold of with a coat hanger or whatever you were using. They don't do that anymore. Now they're straight. And I think that was for that reason. So she does it in her best, you know, fair style. You know those fair games where you had to pick up the little bottle with the little ring on the string. Well, that's what it was like. Jennifer was in there, and she's dropping the little string down, and she's angling it over towards that little pull-up thingy, and she's angling it over, and we discover that the window is curved so that when she's got it, it's too far away from the little knobby when you put it straight down. So she's like, rock the car. So here I am. Now, keep in mind that the cat and the dog are in the car, and I'm rocking the car back and forth to get the swings, the little string swaying, to get it over the little doohickey in the car. And now the boarders are starting to gather that are there at the farm going, what you doing? And I had been trying to hide this so we didn't have to tell the other boarders that but the cat locked the car and all my faults for the last hour at this point. So finally, she does get the little string. Believe it or not, Jamie, she got the little string over the little knobby.
Ah, but I had to use a second tool, didn't I?
Yes, and she says, well, I got to have something else in there to force it down. She comes back with pieces of hay, long pieces of hay. And she sticks the long piece of hay down in there, and she gets the long piece of hay down by the string, and she pushes the duct tape against the little knobby, and I'll be damned if it didn't work. The duct tape stuck the little knobby. She pulls the string up, and it unlocks.
Let me finish this sentence, yeah, because I'm waiting, yeah, for this part. And then the cat saw the string hanging down, thought it was a great toy, jumped up, and relocked the car.
He tried to.
Oh, string toy. Yay. Love this game. I'll wait to kill the dog till later. Are you kidding me, Jennifer? That is amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, so now added to my emergency kit list is we have the duct tape. We always have that. Is at least one long shoestring and a piece of straw.
I love your ingenuity. And I love the fact that you were able to do that. But I find it shocking that you nor anybody else at the barn had any sort of roadside assistance plan. What is wrong with you people?
Wait a minute. If I can get it open myself with a shoestring and duct tape, why am I going to pay AAA $100?
No. AAA is not $100. It's like $40 for the entire year. Trust me, I lock my keys in my car on a regular basis. And I appreciate the fact that just the other day I locked my keys in my truck with the truck running, if you recall, and called them, and they were out there in like 15 minutes. I did not save a lot, I did not waste a lot of gas. I did not spend a lot of time with my car and perched over it with the truck keys, with the duct tape, and with some sort of tool. Roadside assistance. You probably get it with your insurance company. It's like $3 a month if you get it with your insurance company. Please take a look, my friend. You're married to Glenn.
That's true. It would not have made a great story for the show. So we were thinking of the show the entire time.
Uh-huh. You're married to Glenn, Jennifer. Let me just go ahead. Your husband leaves the cat in the car with the dog while it's running and does not crack a window. First of all, Glenn, super dangerous. There is carbon monoxide.
Well, the air conditioner was going. It was fine. I've been air conditioning the outside.
Carbon monoxide poisoning. So you got to crack a window anyway.
He doesn't want any flies in the car.
That's true. The barn has lots of flies.
You have a cat and a dog, and you're worried about flies?
What would have happened then is he would have cracked the window, and then the cat would have been trying to catch the fly, would have jumped down and landed on the accelerator pedal, and the whole place would have exploded or something.
Well, then you wouldn't
Give me some credit here. Would you ever have pictured the cat stepping on the lock? Would that have gone through your mind at all?
Yes.
No, it would not.
Without a doubt. If I leave my dogs in the car, I crack windows enough for my arms to get through. I'm not kidding you. Because I always think of the dog standing on the door, wagging his tail and going, click. But You are trying to find a home for this cat, so if the car blew up, you would not have to try to find a home for your cat.
I think the cat knew we were trying to find a home, and this was his way of saying, screw you.
Yeah, that's so smart. Smart move. Glenn, Jennifer, let me just call your insurance company and add that $2 a month to your policy because you're married to Glenn. That should be enough for you. I don't know why you have to argue with me about it.
I could go on about the great and wonderful things Glenn has done with vehicles over the years, but we'll stop with just that one story.
This is for you, Jen.
Jen here, host of the Horse Tip Daily Show on the Horse Radio Network. The way consumers interact with the brands they have trusted for years and those they are about to fall in love with for the first time is becoming more and more mobile, literally, and will continue to do so for the foreseeable future. Podcasts or internet radio shows like this one combine the new consumer preference for on-demand information and entertainment with the power of niche market audiences. Advertising on the Horse Radio Network podcasts allows you to reach the equestrian consumer using today's preferred on-demand delivery system. It's cost-effective and flexible, able to reinforce your existing marketing and social media strategies. To learn more about advertising on this show or any of the shows on the Horse Radio Network, contact us at 859-951-2022 or you can email us at glenn@horseradionetwork.com. That's Glenn with two N's at horseradionetwork.com. Come and join the Horse Radio Network family. You'll enjoy the ride.
While we were over at ADA, we had the fortune of meeting somebody who's quite a legend in the eventing world. His name is William Micklem. He's Irish, and he's a breeder, and he's also written a couple of books, and we had him on the show here yesterday on our Tack Talk Day talking about his bridle that he has, the Micklem bridle, which is becoming very popular with the eventers as well. But today we want to talk to him. We got to catch up with him a little bit about breeding, Jennifer and I did, and I think you're going to find this conversation fascinating. And if you're an eventer, you'll know some of these horses that he has bred because they are world famous. So let's hear from William Micklem. Hi, Glenn here, and I am with Coach Jen, and we are at the American Equestrian Trade Association show.
In chilly Philadelphia.
Woo-hoo! Philadelphia, but we're enjoying our time here, as we always do, checking out all the new products.
All kinds of cool stuff, cool people.
I haven't been able to keep Jennifer from spending money, and I think we're going to need another bag to go home on a plane. But we are here with William Micklem, and you flew over from where?
I came over from Ireland, Glenn.
From Ireland. Okay, great. And William has a book we're going to talk about here in just a minute, but I want to talk about your breeding program first because we haven't been able to talk about that yet today. So tell us about your breeding program and who are some of the horses you've bred.
Glenn, it's great to be here, first of all, I wanted to say.
Well, thank you.
And as somebody,
you've been a guest on some of our other shows,
yes,
too.
But you know,
voice will be very familiar to listeners of the Eventing Radio.
I'm stealing you from Samantha now. So, Samantha, you can't have him back. We got him now. You can't have
great
him back.
Voice.
Well, it's a pleasant steal, and I wanted to say how important the Horse Radio Network is to us in the horse world. It's opened up doors, and it's brought in a new audience, and it's a great communication tool.
Thank
you, Glenn.
Well, thank you for that. So tell us about your breeding program.
Well, I have a very small breeding program. You know, I often
In Ireland. Yep.
I often say to people, you know, my students, you know, if they haven't got a few spare bucks going, that it's cheaper to buy a mare. So I did exactly that.
It's the reason we've always owned mares, you know, until recently.
So I did exactly that for my wife who rode, and I was lucky enough to buy a couple of good mares. And when it came to retire those mares, and my wife retired from competition, I said we should breed from them, and I investigated.
What competition? Was she an eventer or
a
jumper?
She was an event rider. I had one particularly very special mare, which went by the name of High Dolly, very special in terms of her breeding. And I put her to a horse called Master Imp, And in fact, I put her to a horse called Mastering four times. And every single one of her foals were absolutely spectacular. So that
that's pretty unusual. That really is unusual in the breeding industry, because you don't see A going back to the same stallion, because everybody has this thing that, oh, you can't go back to the same stallion twice because you'll never have lightning strike twice. But obviously, it can happen.
Certainly, as we all know, within a family of children can be very different. But if you find breeding that is true and you find something that knits together, then go with it. And I was aware from the very earliest that High Dolly's first foal was Mandiba, that Mandiba was very special.
Now, that's a name that the eventers are going to recognize.
So Mandiba was the great horse which Karen O'Connor rode for so many years and took to the Beijing Olympics and won the three-star World Cup competition at Rebecca Farm. In fact, he's an extraordinary horse, a prolific winner at one, two, and three-star level. But you know what? I will never forget the first day I saw him as a two-year-old gallop down our 25-acre hill, you know, on the side of a field. It's typically Irish with trees and shrubs, and it's not easy terrain, but the balance and the beauty of his step. And I knew I had a special one then, and I knew that I should send the mare back to the same stallion. And the fourth offspring we had was High Kingdom, who won a silver medal with Zara Phillips at the London Olympics, which is also very exciting. And all the horses have this characteristic of their mother, which is tremendous gentleness, but also great courage and a natural wish to jump and express themselves.
How were they as babies?
They were different mentally.
Yeah? I was wondering about that.
Mandiba was always sensitive. And when I sent him to her in America, I said, this is a horse that needs to be ridden by you, by someone with sensitivity. Probably he would suit a number of women, and I didn't think that he was the sort of horse to be bullied by some people who maybe be male and maybe ask slightly too much. But he was always sensitive, whereas High Kingdom was bomb-proof from the earliest stage. He always had great...
Curious into everything,
and you couldn't keep him in. He would jump out all the time. And I told Zara this when I sent him to Zara. Both horses were sold sight unseen, and I don't think she really believed me, but they have big high paddocks, high rails on the paddocks, and to this day, High Kingdom jumps from paddock to paddock over the four rail post and rail.
We had one that was like that, and that's a nightmare, by the way.
It's a nightmare, but it's absolutely lovely.
Yeah, it's a nightmare when you're not riding them. It's terrific when you are riding them. Great.
And I'm delighted. So I've bred a number of other horses, and we've done some embryo transplants. I did the embryo transplant on Harbour Pilot, who was part of your gold medal winning team in the Pan American Games. And I have a full brother who's a stallion of Mandiba and High Kingdom, who I call Jackaroo.
So I'm seeing a picture of her who's absolutely stunning.
He's a wonderful horse, exactly the same temperament, but...
Does he have any white? He's a bay.
He has a small bit of white on his face.
That's about it, yeah.
And we just brought in frozen semen into the United States of America, so for the first time he's available for American breeders. And he's with Nadia Cook, who is at Shelburne Farms. And so that's exciting, because I'd like to think that, you know, special families are rare, and the progress that we've made with the breeding would suggest that it's very rare for any bad members of this family. They're all superstars. I have a family of three children, and my wife still rides, in fact. They all ride offspring of this family. Mm-hmm. We are just so lucky. I'm blessed with superstars.
Now, are you finding lineage here in the United States that you can look at those family lines and say, this is going to be a great match for Jackaroo, like you do in Ireland? Or have those lines not been imported into America previously?
Well, some of the best, you know, people talk about French thoroughbreds and Irish thoroughbreds and English thoroughbreds and the differences. But if you go back a little way, you'll find that they all come from the same roots. Mm-hmm. And yes, I've identified the lines that really make jumpers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the horses, for instance, that Bruce Davison has had, or Mike Plum had in the old days, or Kathy Kusner had as jumpers, a lot of them came from the same families.
Mm-hmm.
I did a research for the last 30 years on all championship horses in all disciplines, dressage, horse trials, and show jumping, looking at the thoroughbred blood and see which the families which are successful. And the extraordinary thing is there are about six what I would call golden families, and these horses come up time and time and time again. So yes, I think you can look at the genes. Mm-hmm. And excuse me, the experts say that mental abilities are more heritable than physical abilities. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting one, because this family are so good mentally. Mm-hmm. And unless you have a horse that's trainable and yet able to look after itself, you're in trouble.
Well, sure. What's the good of an athlete with a fried brain?
Especially an inventor.
Yeah.
But in fact, it applies to all disciplines. And, you know, as a trainer, and that's really why I'm here at this trade show. I'm here as a trainer and doing everything I can to encourage people to train horses better, look after horses better, make them more comfortable in their equipment. As a trainer, I know that if you make your horses comfortable and you train them well, they can look after you. And if you're going to jump off against the clock in Wellington on the Grand Prix on the weekend, you want a horse that you can leave out half a stride and keep going forwards, and the horse is still going to look after you and still be clean. The same obviously applies to the venting. But it also applies to the dressage and the type of performance we've been getting from, for instance, Charlotte Dujardin, mm-hmm. who won the gold medal at the London Olympics. They're training the horses in such a way as the horses are happy. The horses aren't so, if you like, strangulated. And this is so exciting, because we have a whole new world opening up to people who may not be interested in riding the horses in a dominating way. Mm-hmm. And if you can get partnership as opposed to domination, if you can get acceptance as opposed to what is put on the bottom of the dressage test called submission, mm-hmm. a whole new world opens up for so many people. Great, very exciting.
It's interesting that you said that, because we had this conversation earlier with Hunter Jumper rider, and we talked about the fact that in dressage, they're starting to trail ride their horses more. They're getting them out of the barn. They're not in the barn 25 hours a day anymore. They're really looking for what you just said, a happier horse, a mentally happier horse, and they're spending more time with their horses than they used to instead of getting on and getting off. I don't think we've seen that transition to the Hunter Jumper side yet, but it's starting. Starting a little bit at a time, so it's very interesting that you say that.
I mean, I love the idea that of one horse doing more than one discipline. I love the idea at all levels, and I love the idea of treating the horse in a more natural way. So none of my horses live in single stables, and as far as possible, they have ad lib feeding of whatever mm-hmm. type is suitable for the particular horses. I mean, I remember a headline in the Horse and Hound, the British major magazine, about 2 years ago, and the headline on the front was, "Are our horses too valuable to turn out?" Now, they were talking about elite horses, but I fully expected when I opened the pages and went to the inside story, they would say, well, of course our horses aren't too valuable to turn out.
Don't turn them out,
they
right.
must be turned out. But the article did the reverse. It said, yes, they're too valuable to turn out.
That's right.
And that's appalling.
Does that make you cringe?
Oh.
It made me cringe.
It's appalling. It's appalling. And there are all sorts of things which are appalling.
Horses weren't stalls in the wild.
They didn't evolve that way.
No, they didn't evolve that way at all.
So I'm interested in treating horses more naturally. I mean, Mandibo had never been in a single stable before he went to Karen O'Connor as a six-year-old. And unfortunately, he also had never had a rug on.
Oh, now, dear.
Is that right?
And I didn't tell
her. Did you warn her that?
No.
So
I gather that was an exciting day. Karen was on the phone to me. But gosh, how lucky I am with my horses that they've gone to the right, what I call the right hotels. And that's a key part of the whole thing. We need our horses ridden and treated by that caliber of person, because it makes such a difference. And that tradition of horsemanship and education that flows through, if you like, the bloodlines of those riders. That's so valuable, and I hope it's tapped for future generations.
What's changed in breeding over the last since you were familiar with breeding, 30 years ago? What has changed?
Well, there are an enormous number of changes, and one of the big changes is the rise of the continental warm blood, which most people look upon as a separate breed,
right.
When in fact it's a type.
Right.
And many of the successful horses...
Made up of other breeds. It's a type made up of other breeds.
Correct.
Right.
So many of the most successful horses, which may have a Hanoverian or Holstein stamp on or a Dutch stamp on them, can be as much as 97% pure thoroughbred and 3% other blood. So the German gold-winning team from Eventing, for instance, at the Olympic Games, none of their horses was less than 75% thoroughbred. and Ingrid Klimke's horse was 97%.
Yet they call them warm bloods.
And yet they're called warm bloods. So there is there's confusion out there, and most people don't actually they think they know what a warm blood is, but in fact it can be many different things, and that's a problem. And also people are buying horses and breeding horses that, in my opinion, are too big. When you look at the Hicksteads of the world, the famous show jumper with Eric Lamaze, and you look at the grey horse of Laura Krauts, Cedric, and Ito du Chateau, forgive my pronunciation, three of the leading show jumping horses in the world, they're all sort of either just 16 hands or down to 15-1. Mm-hmm. And so many of the top, even top show jumping horses, actually are smaller.
I was going to say, I think that's sort of coming back again. Isn't it starting to come back away from the 17.5 handers?
Well, I was in Wellington the last few days at the show, and I was saddened is the wrong word, but I was in the direction of being saddened because so many people I felt were riding horses.
The 17 handers?
Much too big for them. And those horses don't last as long. They eat much more.
They're harder to take care of.
We had draft horses, we know. they tend to have more physical problems.
Right.
I mean, the Irish pony, as an example, is wonderful. I mean, and their longevity is wonderful, and their athleticism is wonderful. But pound for pound, they probably are better performers than a horse. But if you can have what I would call a small horse, you can have a horse around 16 hands, 15-3, 16 hands. You know, that is the perfect horse for so many people. It's for the smaller adults, for the children, everybody. And in the long term, you get more value for money for that type of horse.
And you're less likely to have the wear and tear because, I'm sorry, when you're a 17.5-hundred-pound horse, all that wear and tear is multiplied.
You're so right. And coming from Ireland as regards horse breeding, and I'm proud to say this, if you look at the all-time list of points winners in the United Kingdom, where there's more eventing than there is anywhere else in the world, the horses which won most points in the history of eventing, of the top 10, only one is not an Irish horse. Now, there's an indication of durability. There's an indication of longevity. And having found the right horse and having trained it, why not have one that's going to last a little longer?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sadness to me that we don't have so many horse heroes. You know, there are very few horses that the general public or even in the horse world that we begin to pick up on because they've been around for a few years.
Right.
You know, I remember
Karen
O'Connor's Biko, who I bought as a three-year-old and again went to her as a six-year-old. I remember the huge publicity and the huge fan club that he generated as a horse.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to think that we would try and work harder to publicize more horse heroes because that's what the sport is all about. You can't do the sport without horses.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
These names pass so quickly because a number of the horses stay at the stop. At the top, such a short space of
right.
time.
A season or two. And
that's even true. I mean, that's especially true in the racing world where there'll be big names today and gone tomorrow because they go out for breeding and nobody ever hears them again in the general public. And so we see that a lot in the racing world, too. They're big names now and become very popular and have fan clubs, and then they're gone because they retire so soon.
Apart from the real superstars, the horse that was the superstar in the U.K., and Ireland last year was a horse called Frankel. And Frankel won a record
yeah,
number.
Yeah, we talked a lot about Frankel.
A record number of Group 1 races. But what is news at the moment, if you like, is his first foal
was
arrived on the ground.
Yeah.
And his first foal was on the national news.
Oh, really?
On the news
mm-hmm.
spot. Plus the fact that he had generated in his first season at stud $25 million in stallion fees. But that's a different game, and I'm interested in the whole wide, if you like, view of horses, of riding at all levels, riding for all comers, and that's what makes riding so great.
Well, I would love to have you back again to talk about your book and the contents of the book. Tell us the name of the book here.
The book is called The Complete Horse Riding Manual.
And it's found on
Amazon? The Complete Horse Riding Manual. You'll find it on Amazon.
Okay.
And it's been in the top 50, I'm glad to say, since 2003, and it's published by Dorling Kindersley, who are a Penguin company, and it's a wonderful book because it's illustrated all throughout. The show jumping section would stand up as a show jumping book, the dressage section would stand up as a dressage section, etc., and we do young horse sections, we do fitting of the rider sections and things like that, so it's an unusual book, it's a big book, and I'm glad to say because it's been translated into 11 languages that it's the top-selling manual in the world. But I'd have to say at the moment I'm more excited by my bridle, which is the Micklem bridle, which is here at the trade show, and the other reason why I'm here. I'm here with the skull of a horse, my friend Henry, I call him, and to show you that the bridle is designed from the inside out. So I worked from my knowledge of the anatomy of the skull to try and say, how could I come up with a more comfortable bridle?
We'll have you back again to talk about that.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Glenn,
Thanks
for your time.
Thanks for stopping by. It was cool.
Amazon.com. Admit it. You shop on Amazon.com. Don't be embarrassed. We all do. Well, next time you have a hankering to hit up Amazon for some deals, stop by horsesinthemorning.com first. Click on the Amazon.com link on the left side of the homepage, and then shop till you drop. Doesn't cost you a penny, and it helps us keep the lights on here at Horse Radio Network.
As well. Do you have a daily winning?
I do. My daily winnie goes out to a very special horse husband who last night stepped up to the plate when his cute little pony, P.T. Scooter, was walking around the shed row on his hind legs, turning down the opportunity even when I offered to let him walk Beaker, who was very politely using all four hooves to walk. And he walked his crazy, nutty, whacked-out pony around the shed row for 15 minutes because the pony was cold. Good job, Glenn.
Our spoiled ponies, we get home last night, it had poured. I mean, it probably inches worth of rain while we were gone in Ocala here, and the temperatures got down to the 40s, so it was pretty chilly, and they're half-shaved, so we hadn't put a blanket on them because they really didn't need one when we left, and it was supposed to be a nice day.
Oh.
Yeah, and we weren't really supposed to get inches of rain as we've been getting every day here in Florida. So we get home and bring them in, and they're cold, and they're shaking, and Jennifer's like, well, we got to walk him around. Well, he didn't really want to walk around. He wanted to eat. So he was having a little bit of a meltdown, and, you know, it's not as intimidating when a 12-and-a-half-hand pony has a meltdown as it is when a 17-hand horse has a meltdown.
If he was a baby, he'd have been screaming and throwing himself on the floor and holding his breath. Yeah.
Yeah,
it
was definitely a temper tantrum. It was mad.
Yeah,
I'm cold, you didn't bring me in, and I missed my dinner. So once we fed him, then he was fine. But he wanted to eat.
He had to do the roll.
He has this thing, and I know we've mentioned this before, but he did it to me again yesterday. He has this thing when he wants to roll, he just doesn't give you any warning. He just goes down. And I was bringing him from one paddock to another, and there's a spot with a lot of sand right at the gate. And I'm just walking along, and I wasn't particularly paying attention to him. He was behind me, and all of a sudden, I couldn't pull him anymore. And there he is, rolling on the ground. He just goes down with a thud and rolls. That's it.
Yep.
I'm rolling. And, I hope he doesn't do that with his new harness when it gets here, because that'd be bad.
He did it in the barn aisle last night. You're trying to walk him. It's like, nope, right now. Going to roll in the aisle. Really?
Right in the aisle. Now, fortunately, we have a sand aisle, but I was worried about him getting stuck, and he just, when he wants to roll, you can't stop him either. He just goes down. You have no time to try and stop him. He just gets it in his head, and that's what he does. So, as I said, I just hope he doesn't do it with the harness on or with the cart attached. That'd be bad. Really bad. So, Jennifer, yesterday, I said, this fancy new cart, we'll see how long it stays in one piece after I finally get the pony in it. It should be interesting. You know, what's
we're
going to
be testing all those little bits of breakaway parts.
I said, what's a new vehicle without a dent, right? They all have to have a dent.
Right. You always have to have a dent.
I saw this one. I don't know what this website is, angelfire.com. But anyway, I saw this list on there. We've done these before, but there were some new ones on here I thought would be fun to go over. You know you're a horse person when? So you ready for some of these?
I'm ready. We'll see how many I match.
You jump out of bed at 5 a.m. on Sunday to feed before an early ride, but barely hear the 5 a.m. alarm on Monday morning. That is so true.
There's a lot of those out there, yeah.
Yes. You'll get
That's
up at 3 a.m. on a Sunday.
<That's not
laughs> No, I can't help but get up early every day. You have more pictures of your horse in your office than of your family. That's true. Seen
I used to work at a very big retail company in the horse world, and there were definitely more pictures of horses than anything else. And dogs.
But see, I have 5 pictures of horses in my office. And, oh, technically that one right there, I have a cool picture of a steam engine in here, and there is a family member in the picture of the steam engine. So that counts as one family member. Right?
I don't think my picture's even in your office. Of course, yours isn't in mine either.
You're my screensaver. You're in here all
That's
the time.
That's right. Then you leave work feeling stiff, tense, with a stomach or headache, and all those feelings disappear the minute you go through the first gate to the ranch. So that's pretty much true when you walk in the barn. You drive up in the yard, get out of the car, and inhale the perfume of a manure pile. That's true. You talk like to the horses like they were your kids. Well, who doesn't do that? We all do that with our animals. Let's be honest. If we're honest, we do that with the dogs and the cats and the chickens and the goats, too.
Yeah.
All your stock has 4 legs. And that is true. Because you surely don't have any of the paper kind.
No.
No. Speaking of which, did you see the picture or the article I posted this morning on Horses in the Morning? It was over in England of the pony. That was, they found at 5 a.m. standing by the ATM machine.
Oh, that was too funny. Like, really?
Yeah.
Making a withdrawal or
yeah,
what?
The photo was taken at 5 a.m. and no one, let me read the article to you because it was funny. Early risers in Cardiff, city center, were met with a bizarre sight of a pony standing at a cash machine earlier this week. The photo was taken at 5 a.m., and no one can quite explain why the animal is standing at the machine. Either he's having a bit of mare trying to remember his PIN number, or he's just waiting patiently for the cash to be handed out. A stable bank account is probably the only thing on his mind, so we're worried about his finances are in a bit of trouble, and he seems to have a bit of a long face. A lot of bad puns there. Maybe he's saddled with a few dates and just needs to pay them off instead of horsing around in the field every day, pretending that they don't exist. There's about 25 bad puns in that article. All in a row, right. But it was a cute picture. And I posted, as if horses don't cost us enough, now they're using our ATM cards. So
we're just saving the middleman right there. Just goes directly from the bank account to the horse.
He can just spend it on whatever he wants.
Yep.
Well, a couple more on the list here of, you're a horse person. Let's see here. Hold on one second. I have to get back
to it. Your bicycle is used as a bridle or saddle rack. I like that one.
Yeah. It's true. You spend a lot of dollars on a trip to Europe and end up spending most of your time watching horses. Most of the trips we end up on, horses are involved in some way. You have a terrible fall off your horse, and the only concern is your horse okay? That's true. Jennifer's done that one a few times. This is a good one, and this is true of hay, too. You find human hair in your food, and it makes you gag, but horse hair goes down fine.
Just fine.
That's true.
Quite a great, yeah. Good nutrition there.
I mean, we eat our lunches in the barn. So.
I found some hay inside the silverware drawer the other day. Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you, there's hay everywhere in our house. You live with electric fencing taped around the lawn so the horses can mow it for you. Who of us haven't
yes,
done
<absolutely.
laughs> that? We've all done that. Let me find another one here. Oh, here we go. After it snows, the pathway to the manure pile is the first thing that gets cleared, and then the front porch and sidewalk. That is true. if you aren't interested in watching the news, but have to in order to catch the weather, so you know if the barn needs to be left open for the horses. True, we pretty much watch news for the weather.
Oh, I like this one. The first harbinger of spring isn't the red-breasted robin; it's the fly.
You know, we never really got rid of our flies down here in Florida this year. We've had their fly masks on every day. And I thought last year, but it's been very wet this year. We never had our dry season. We're supposed to have like they have in California. And I wonder if that's why the flies are still around. Because I don't remember being around in the dead of winter last time.
Well, we also live in a neighborhood now that is a little bit more densely populated with horses. The other side of the, you know, 5 miles away where we were, there were only probably 3 horses within a 50-acre radius. Here, we probably have 10 horses in a 50-acre radius, and I think that makes a difference.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's probably true. I love this one. A new friend walks in your door for the first time, takes a smell, and says with a smile, "I didn't know you had horses."
Yeah. Yep. I didn't change my jacket when I came back from feeding this morning, and my studio is awash with the heavy scent of dirty, wet horse right now.
You live hand to mouth and somehow come up with the $800 for the emergency vet bills. That is true, isn't it? You know, we're so frugal and we're so careful about what we spend our money on, and then the vet bill comes and somehow we pay it. I don't know how that happens sometimes, on the payment plan sometimes, but yeah, sometimes we
pay
it.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, that's when you go to Craigslist and you have a yard sale on Craigslist. You have for sale empty coffee cans, quilts for your bed that your aunt gave you several years ago for Christmas are for sale for $5. That's how you pay the $800 vet bill. Yes.
Well, Jennifer is going to go ahead and get our first guest on the line here. I'll go over a couple more of these with you as we go along, and then we'll hear from Kentucky Performance Products here in just a minute. You drive by any field anywhere, and you look very hard for horses. This includes trips to foreign countries. I do find myself doing that. When you're driving around, and if there's a paddock that has a fence around it, you're always looking to see what's in the paddock. I wonder if other people, do non-horse people do that? I doubt it. I mean, we're the only ones that probably do that. You feel tired all day at work and sitting at your desk, and then you go to the barn and you ride 3 horses. How true is that? The first bills you pay each month are horse-related. You really don't need the phone anyway, unless you have to call the vet. Oops, better pay the phone. You don't have to be asked by your non-horsey family what you want for Christmas anymore, because they know now just to get you a gift certificate to a horse catalog. And the smart ones have figured that out. The not-so-smart ones haven't figured that out yet, but eventually they will.